Welcome to Special Sauce, Serious Eats podcast about food and life. Every week on Special Sauce, we talk to some of the leading lights of American culture, food folks and non-food folks alike.
We never once discussed New York Times stars. It wasn't like this is going to be a two-star restaurant or this is going to be a three-star restaurant. There's going to be a no-star restaurant. I want to open the restaurant that I want to go to every day. There's not one thing that lives on Lilia's menu that's not something that I'm like, oh man, I would want to devour that.
This week, our guest is Missy Robbins, chef owner of one of the best Italian restaurants in the country, Lilia, which is on everyone's short list of places you have to eat if you're serious about pasta. Missy worked at the influential Washington, D.C. restaurant 1789 while she was still at college. She then went to culinary school, and after working at serious restaurants in New York, she ended up traveling in northern Italy to get a firmer grounding in Italian food. Missy earned Michelin stars running the kitchens at the two branches of Avoce. In 2013, she shocked the cooking world by quitting Avoce and taking a self-imposed sabbatical from the stoves. What did you learn in those 2.5 years?
I didn't want to work 16 hours a day. I didn't want to be in a stressful environment. I wasn't sure that I actually wanted to open a restaurant. I structured Lilia so that I can have kind of the life I want. And that doesn't mean I don't work 14-hour days anymore. And it doesn't mean I'm not working 7 days a week in some capacity or another. It does mean that I am not necessarily at the restaurant every single night. I am there 5-6 days a week usually. But it's just different. I'm not chained to the stove. My team takes care of production. I have an amazing kitchen team from top to bottom, from chef de cuisine to prep people. And I'm really fortunate and really lucky that I've been able to cultivate that over the last year. And I hope that, knock on wood, that it stays that way, because it's allowed me to kind of be a business owner and a chef, yeah, and be creative and be involved in the front of the house and the back of the house and every kind of business and creative decision that happens. And so that's what I learned that I want to do. And that was a process, though. I mean, I was looking at very small spaces in the West Village that were really expensive, and I lived in the West Village at the time, and my dream and my business
was to walk to work.
And my business partner's dream, who lived above me, we were neighbors and that's how we met, was to open in the West Village. And we looked for a really long time, and I realized in that time that it was really cost prohibitive, just both from a business perspective, but also from a personal perspective. I wouldn't have been able to afford a chef de cuisine. So I could have taken one of these spaces and what was going to go into rent.
And then you go back to the old life.
And then I was going to be making chicken stock from 9 a.m. And I'm in my 40s. It's not where I wanted to be in my career. And sometimes that's hard to admit. It's really hard to say, I don't want to be chained to a stove anymore. And by the way, I wasn't chained to a stove at Avoce or Spiaggia.
No, that was self-imposed.
I've been in big restaurants
for a long time. If you were chained, it's because you chained yourself.
And I didn't necessarily chain myself there, too. I had big teams there. I didn't necessarily cook as much as you might think I did. But
in your head,
yeah, in my head, I had to be there all the time in my head. And, now... I say I'll be in at 1:00. I have something to do in the morning, and my team is like, great. They don't want me there. They're fine.
Right.
So it's just different. But I definitely learned balance. I mean, I really learned balance. I learned how important it is to take care of yourself physically. I lost 40 pounds when I wasn't working. I went on a very serious diet. You asked me about breakfast before we started. That's become a really important thing to me. I work out a lot.
You do look happier.
I'm definitely happier. I'm healthier. I take really good care of myself. Sleep is really important to me. I committed myself when I opened Lilia that no matter what, I was going to have 7 hours of sleep a night.
Right.
And I've done that for the most part. Mm-hmm. If I get home at 1 a.m, I make sure I sleep till 8. Like, I'm just very sort of religious about that. And I think it's helped me be saner in the kitchen and be calmer. I mean, night after night after night, people come and say, why do you look so relaxed? Why is your kitchen so calm? Even my cooks are calm. There's no yelling in the kitchen. Everyone just kind of does their thing.
Yeah.
We laugh a lot. We have a really good time in the kitchen.
That's great.
So, yeah, it's different.
So, I want to talk about pasta for a second, because when my friend Pete Wells wrote his review of Lilia in the New York Times, the opening sentence, and Pete's a lovely, lovely writer, as you know, but he said, My one
well, now
sentence,
I think he is, as of March 29th.
My one-sentence review of Lilia for the too-long-didn't-read crowd, colon, Missy Robbins is cooking pasta again. There is something magical about your pasta.
Thank you.
And I say that having eaten it at Avoce and at Lilia. What's the deal? You're like the pasta whisperer.
You know, I've been working on pasta since Italy, since I lived in Italy, which is now almost 17 years ago, I think. So that's been a passion of mine forever. And I love the craft of physically making pasta, pasta dough, pasta hand shaping. This is the first time I've used an extruder. And it takes a lot of experimentation to get the right recipe and to get the right moisture and to dry it properly. And everyone has a different technique.
And an extruder, we should explain, is something where you put the dough in and it shapes the pasta for you. Where,
so things like spaghetti, things like the malfadini that's become very popular at Lilia. I just love it and I take it really seriously. And it's the one area that I am very strict in the kitchen about there's no room for error, especially since he wrote that and now we know that people are coming there to eat pasta. It's just years and years of studying. I mean, it's really years and years in studying pasta, and that we had a huge pasta program at Spiaggia. We developed a huge pasta program at Avoce. Lilia, honestly, was not meant to be a pasta-focused restaurant. It was meant to be part of what we were doing.
See, your problem is that your pasta's too damn good, though.
I, as I said, changed my diet a lot and started eating a lot of vegetables and a lot of fish, and we put in this wood-burning grill, and that was really meant to be more of the focus, and it is a focus. I mean, we sell a crazy amount of stuff off the grill, but for some reason, the pasta has really resonated with people. I think there's, especially at Lilia, I think there is a comfort about the pasta. It's very simple. The malfadini is the most popular dish on the menu. It's competing with agnolotti quite a bit now, but the malfadini has three ingredients in it. It's just, and people are surprised by it. I think there's an element of surprise, like how could something this simple taste like this?
And those three ingredients?
Pink peppercorns, butter, and Parmigiano Reggiano.
That's it.
Well, and a little water from the pasta tank.
Water doesn't count.
Yeah, and the pasta itself. I think the texture of our pastas resonates with people. People talk often about the texture of the malfadini. And again, we work really hard on that. My chef, Eric, he's my chef de cuisine. We were talking the other day, and he said, you know what's so awesome about our staff? We dry all the pasta on the bar now. We have so much of it that we don't have anywhere else to put it. So we dry it during the day on the bar, and he said every single cook, when they get to work, touches the pasta to see where it's at in the drying process. And so Everyone kind of cares about it. And I've had my pasta cooks come to me all the time and say, is this right? It seems off today. What do I do? And it's something that's really hard to fix if it's already made and it's made hours before the cooks get there.
But that's just a function of the pride that you've instilled in the whole crew.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're great. I mean, they're really a great crew, and they really – pasta sort of – when you get to the pasta station, you've kind of made it in this kitchen. And, you know, a couple people we've hired have had previous pasta experience, so they've ended up there right away. But I have a guy who I just promoted to sous chef who started on Garmage and made it to pasta within a month, sort of by default, because we lost a few people. And he's just so passionate about it. And everyone's really passionate about it now.
That's great. So to people who want to make great pasta at home, give one or two tips.
We use only egg yolks in our dough. It makes it very tender.
This is fresh pasta.
Only yolks, and we use very specific 00 flour from Italy. And the flour and the egg yolks are really two important factors. I mean, pasta is not brain surgery. It just takes some, like, care and love and time. You can't make pasta. You know, we make the dough. We rest the dough. We roll out the dough. We do not freeze any pasta. And there are many schools of thought on that. I've worked in places in Italy that make giant batches of stuff and freeze it. I've worked in places that don't. I am of a school that we do not freeze any of the pasta. So I would say make it fresh. Do it on a Sunday when you have all your time. Salted water is the most important thing. It should taste fairly like the ocean, and using a little pasta water in your sauce to kind of help bring it together and marry it. It has the starches from the cooking in it.
And let's talk about sauce for a second, because you also have a very specific approach to sauce in terms of ratio and balance, and both between the sauce and the pasta and also within the sauce itself.
Yeah. I mean, pasta should never be like drenched in sauce. Pasta and sauce should be married into one, and you should always sort of finish cooking your pasta in the sauce so that it the dough can actually absorb what you're cooking. But my biggest pet peeve is when I see my cooks plating and there's like a pool of sauce in the bottom, and I always say, "Are you serving soup tonight?" And our sauces, I mean, we have one red sauce on the menu. It's a very spicy tomato sauce. And then the rest of our sauces are made, well, we have a pesto. And then a lot of the sauces are very simply made with a little bit of pasta water and a tiny amount of butter. And those starches and butter kind of emulsify together to make a sauce. They're very simple. I mean, they're simple and complex all at the same time.
Right.
Because that ratio of pasta water is really important, and it really takes a lot of practice.
I think it's one of those things. Pasta is sort of like pizza and a lot of food things. It's not the notes you play, it's the notes you don't play.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of the same with my philosophy of everything we're doing at Lilly. We've kind of stripped everything down to the most basic, simple way of doing it. I used to use a tremendous amount of stocks in my pastas, chicken stocks, veal stocks, and I have kind of taken all that away and realized a lot of the cooking at Lilia has been influenced by what I cooked at home when I wasn't working. And I had a very tiny kitchen at home, and it forced me to kind of cook in a very simplistic manner, but still find ways to make it flavorful. And when I started doing all the testing for Lilia, I was like, well, we don't need stock. We don't really need stock for these pastas. And it was a real shift for me.
Sure.
I mean, a real shift. And a lot of things have been a shift at Lilia. I used to cook with 4 times as much butter and olive oil as I do now. And there's still butter in the food and there's still olive oil, but it's a lot less. And we've kind of substituted that for herbs and chilies and lemons and acid and even away from pasta for everything. But it's been a shift for, again, people who have worked for me before. When we were testing pasta and my chef, I said, just make it with butter and cheese so we can see what the texture is like. He made it and I said, wow, that's gross. That has so much butter in it. He said, you realize that's how you cooked it at a Voce for 5 years, right? And I said, wow, we have some learning curve stuff to deal with, and it's not your fault. I said, I've really changed my approach to cooking quite a bit. So it's been interesting for him to see that, too.
So I want to get back to an aside that you uttered about Pete Wells and to talk about restaurant critics and how you have experienced them and how you react, and does what they say, if it's from a credible source, affect your cooking?
It doesn't affect your cooking. It affects your business, for sure. You know, I went into Lilia with a really different approach to how I had been in the past. I came from environments where Michelin stars were the goal, where 3-star reviews were the goal, or at Spiaggia, 4-star reviews. And I think that can put an undue amount of pressure on a chef and on a kitchen and on a restaurant. And you end up always thinking when you're doing a dish, you know, is this good enough for Michelin? Is this going to get a 3-star review? Is this 3-star worthy because I already have 3 stars? Is this 4-star worthy because we already have 4 stars? And that's the environment that I've cooked in for 20 years. And part of that was, again, my own pressure, but in particular at Avoce, that was a very big focus, was Michelin stars. And I kind of lived in, I don't know, in fear, but I definitely lived in a place where I was terrified to lose the Michelin stars. And I wasn't only terrified for kind of my own job, but also for the people who worked for me, because that became their goal,
sure,
too.
And you were responsible for that.
Yeah, and they wanted it. They wanted it really badly. I went into Lilia with a very different approach. We never once discussed New York Times stars. It wasn't like this is going to be a 2-star restaurant or this is going to be a 3-star restaurant. There's going to be no star restaurant. I approached Lilia of I want to open the restaurant that I want to go to every day. And that's really how Lilia was created.
And that's a very personal restaurant.
Yeah. What would I want this restaurant to be like if I was coming? And that starts with the bar. I mean, we have 12 seats at the bar. It has become a dining bar. I created that because that's what I like to do. The food was what do I want to eat? And nothing is on the menu that I don't want to eat. There's not one thing that lives on Lilia's menu that's not something that I'm like, oh, man, I would want to devour that. And I think when you approach something that way and you're not thinking about stars and you're not thinking about Michelin and you just want to cook great food for people. The mantra behind Lilia was let's welcome people into our home and make them feel great when they leave here and let's make them crave the food.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what that meant necessarily in terms of craveability.
It was theoretical.
You don't know what someone's going to crave. I put on the Malfedini as kind of a joke to myself. That dish was created in my kitchen at home for me to test a custom pasta bowl that we designed with Gianno Pandolfi.
And we should have you describe what the Malfedini is.
The Malfedini is this pasta that has ruffled edges that looks like mini lasagna, and that's the one we serve with the pink peppercorns, parmigiano, and butter. And I made that dish originally with spaghetti in my home to see how much would fit in a bowl. And I happened to just have butter and parm at my house. And I turned around and I had pink peppercorns from an event I had done sitting on my counter. And I was like, oh, I'm going to try that. That's kind of looks like it could be cool. And I never thought it would resonate with people. And people, it kind of took on a life of its own. But back to the reviews. I mean, I've had a lot of friends go through. Pete Wells did not review me at Avoce. Sam Sifton did. And that review went well. We got 2 stars and not 3, and we wanted 3. And it was a bummer, but you go on and you do your thing. And you can't cook for stars. The Pete Wells review was such an unbelievable surprise to us. Because when you're not going for 3 stars and it's not something you're thinking about, and it wasn't that I didn't think the Pete Wells review was important. I did. He came in. We treated it like a review, but we also kind of just cooked. It wasn't like I got on the line, pushed everyone away, and said, move out of the way. I'm cooking. I certainly tasted everything. My chef de cuisine tasted everything. We made sure it was all as good as it was going to be. I knew that we gave him food that was as good as we could cook. And if he didn't like it, he just didn't like it. And what are you going to do? Luckily, he reviewed us 6 weeks into opening.
Wow.
That's very, very short. It's a really short time to get reviewed in. And I thought we'd kind of get a really strong 2-star review or a decent 2-star review. Just from past experience and reading his stuff.
Sure.
You don't know. His first visit, he was there for 4 hours at the bar. He looked like he was having a blast. He was sitting 5 feet away from me. We definitely had awkward, weird eye contact movements. He's supposed to act like he doesn't know you, and you act like you don't know him. And it's really, really, frankly, silly at the end of the day.
Right.
So when the review came out, I was really surprised, and it was such an honor. And it was so – the most important thing about the review, I think, was that he – got what we were doing.
Yes.
He understood it.
I think that's the first and foremost responsibility of a critic. Like when I was a critic, that's all I was trying to do was get to the essence of a restaurant so that the chef understood that I knew what he or she wanted to do.
He got it. I mean, he really got what we're trying to do there. And so take away the stars. The stars are amazing. But to me, I was like, oh, wow, like he gets it. He gets what we're trying to do. And that subsequently has happened with almost with every review we've gotten is that people are really understanding what we're trying to do there. And they understand we're trying to make the food just interesting enough without going overboard, and we're trying to make it just homey enough without it being boring. And
yeah.
And the fact that people are understanding that and they're coming back because of it, at the end of the day, we just want a busy restaurant. And so I'm at a point in my career where at Avoce, those accolades were really important for my personal ego. I needed to establish a name for myself. I had lived in New York for 9 years and all of a sudden, and then came back after living in Chicago for 5, and somehow everyone thinks I'm from Chicago, which is not the case. And so I really needed to establish myself, and the Best New Chef was really important to me. The stars were important. The reviews were important. Now, as an owner and as a chef, like, look, it's great for the ego. I'm really proud of that review, and I'm proud of all the reviews we've gotten. But more importantly, I'm happy that people want to come to the restaurant.
I think you're happier that Lily is a reflection of the person you've become.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. And reviews do have an impact. The phones went off the hook the next day. I happened to be answering them myself. We didn't have a reservationist then. We now have one, but we didn't have like a daytime person. The managers would answer the phone.
Right.
And so that was incredible. What has been equally, if not more impactful, was his and was Pete Wells' end of year list that we were number 2 on. And that has been extremely impactful and I think came at a really great time. We were finishing up our first year of business. I think it's great to be the hot restaurant in New York, but hot restaurants really come and go in New York, and
yes.
We don't want to be a hot restaurant. We want longevity.
Yeah.
And we really believe in what we do, and we believe we've helped Williamsburg be a better dining destination, and
sure.
We've become a part of the neighborhood, and that's been one of the best parts to me is getting to know the neighbors and becoming a part of the neighborhood, a neighborhood that I had no knowledge of whatsoever. But that list has definitely made us a destination
sure.
place as well and has made us busy. So you can't complain about reviews because they do change your business.
Yes. So I want to get to the special sauce buffet, but I do want to ask you about now you've come full circle as a chef restaurateur. Do you think about like what's going to happen next, or are you just enjoying this moment?
Both. It's really important for me, and I know that something that's always made me successful, both at Avoce and Spiaggia, where I was at obviously a very different level, but and Lilia, is that I'm present, and that I'm present with my chefs, and that I'm in the kitchen, and I'm interacting with guests nightly, and I'm interacting a lot with the front of the house now because we have an open kitchen, and I'm right there. I can see everything that's going on in the dining room and at the bar.
Yeah,
all
you
night
hung
long.
Out with us a little bit when we were
yeah,
there.
Yeah, no, I love it, and it's great, but we certainly think about what's next, and we look at opportunities, and we've been really fortunate to be presented with a lot of opportunities and seek out our own opportunities. I'm not in a rush. I do know how long things take to open, so I know that no matter what I do, it's not going to happen tomorrow. I have an amazing business partner, and he is definitely out looking at opportunities daily and thinking about stuff and sort of pushing me while I make sure that Lilia is consistent in the kitchen. And both are really important to me. I know that I want more than just Lilia, and I have a lot of things I want to do, but I also never want to like lose sight of Lilia being the baby and the first one and the place that really
right.
helped
shape my
career. And I love being there. I mean, when I travel and I come back, I'm really excited. I got off a plane yesterday. I was at an event and in Naples, Florida, and I came back yesterday morning and went straight to work, which I would have never done 5 years ago.
Yeah, interesting.
But you want to see your kids. It's
yeah.
kind of a cool, it's a very cool feeling. So,
yeah, that's great.
Yeah, so there'll be other stuff. I don't have anything definitive to tell
yeah.
you, but there'll be other stuff.
And now it's time for the special sauce all-you-can-answer buffet. So my first question to you is, who's at your last supper, no family allowed? Could be artists, could be musicians,
wow.
it could be anybody,
that's
poets.
That's a tough question.
I know. You know, you can take a minute. There's no clock
that's
here.
That's a really, really tough question.
And just 3 or 4 people that you just think would be fun to break bread with.
People make fun of me for this one. I always say Madonna.
Because
I'm fascinated by her as an artist and her longevity, and she's just an incredible performer and fairly insane. And
right.
So
I will make fun of you.
I've been made fun of before. I think right now the Obamas would be pretty interesting to sit at a table with. I am not a politically active person, but they're just fascinating as
yes.
a couple and what they've done for this country and where they are. And as humans, I think they'd be pretty interesting.
Yep. Okay. One more. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Can they be
they can be dead.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Let's go with Kandinsky, the artist.
Wow. Always, I love
one of my, always one of my favorites in school.
Really?
I can't tell you anything. I can't expound upon why. I love
well,
the
Kandinsky
art.
Is brilliant.
I love the art. I think you need an artist at the table.
Yeah.
A different perspective.
Yeah. What would you be eating?
Last meal?
Yeah.
Pizza, bubbles, and ice cream.
Pizza, champagne, and ice cream.
Yes.
Is there a style of pizza?
Oh, you know what my style is. Come on.
It's got to be New Haven,
you know,
right?
Yes. Yes. Sally's all the way. Sally's
right,
pizza.
Even though Sally and Flo have now passed on.
I know. It's really sad.
Yes.
It's really sad. But it's still, if I could go back in time to the old Sally's, I would probably have the dinner there, too.
Yeah.
Privately,
yeah.
Though. I would kick everyone out.
You know, when I did my pizza book, I got the most important thing I got. Well, first of all, Gary Trudeau gave me permission because I coached his kid in basketball to use the poster that he made for Sally's 50th anniversary in my book.
Oh, wow.
Which was really cool. But the second most important thing was I got the phone number.
Oh, well, I've had the phone number for many years. My parents and another couple bought...
And we should explain that people get the phone number so you can make reservations, even though normal people can't make reservations. A little bit elitist, but it's kind of cool.
It's super elitist, but when you live in New Haven, it's kind of an important thing. My parents bought 10 pizzas in an auction, something with another couple. And with that—
Came the number.
Came the number. Or one of their friends had it. I don't know, but we definitely had the number. It doesn't
awesome.
Always work, by the way. They're not so forthcoming. And I don't go to Sally's a lot anymore because usually I'm with my parents and I'm definitely not making them wait
like
2 hours. And I don't really want to wait. I go to Modern a lot now.
Got it, which is an excellent pizzeria.
It's awesome.
So what do you make when there's nothing in the house to eat? And you get home, you're tired, but you're hungry.
I never eat late at night anymore, first
okay.
of all. It's not something I do. It's like not a part of what I do anymore. I mean, once in a while I go out, but really rather—
Well, it could be a day off. Like
day
what?
Off? I mean, really simple food, like roasted chickens. Like if I'm cooking dinner, a really simple roasted chicken. I really like to make baked ziti. I really like to make cacio e pepe at home. Really simple stuff.
And give me two guilty pleasures.
All right. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Haagen-Dazs.
I'm with you 100%. One of the greatest brands that's been sold to two multinational corporations and still is as good as it was when Mr. Mattis owned it. You know, what flavor?
I have a few. I definitely am a mint chocolate chip
okay.
lover and chocolate chip, regular chocolate chip, and coffee.
Coffee.
Those
coffee.
Are kind
the
of
coffee
my...
coffee ice cream is major.
But that's like my real
okay.
guilty pleasure. My real, real guilty pleasure is another one, and I very rarely indulge in this, Dr. Pepper on crushed ice.
So regular Dr. Pepper on crushed ice.
Yeah.
It's pretty swell.
It's a good one.
It is a good one.
It's a good one.
It's the first time anyone's mentioned that, but that's a really good one.
It just came to mind. And my staff knows it, too. And once in a while, they bring me Dr. Pepper. But I don't drink soda. Like, I very rarely drink soda. So when I have a Dr. Pepper, it's pretty...
From a bottle.
I'll drink it from a can.
You'll drink it from a can, you're okay.
I'll drink it from a can, yeah. But the crushed ice is essential.
Okay, this is related to the Last Supper question. One person that you would love to have a one-on-one lunch with just because you want to find out more about how their mind works and what they really think about things.
Huh. I'm going to go with Bono. Was my favorite band growing up.
Mm-hmm.
I've cooked for him.
You've cooked
for him. At Spiaggia. Yes.
He likes to eat, I've heard.
That was one of the greatest days ever. We did a private lunch for them. In the dining room, which was never open for lunch.
Because they were playing in Chicago.
I don't know what they were doing.
Yeah.
But I just think he's been so involved in so many charities. He's a brilliant musician.
He's very articulate.
I think it would be pretty cool.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would like to have lunch with
Bob. All right, great. You can come too.
All right, that's good. What would happen on Missy Robbins Day? If there was a Missy Robbins Day across the country, like what would happen?
I think bowls and bowls and bowls of pasta. Would be celebrated.
All over?
Yes.
On every street corner,
yes.
There would be bowls and bowls of
bowls
pasta.
Bowls of pasta and champagne bottles popping.
That sounds perfect. Well, thank you so much for sharing your special sauce with us, Missy.
Thank you. This was fun.
It's really been a pleasure. And if you're in search of a great Italian meal in a magical little spot, head to Lilia in Brooklyn. So long, Serious Eaters. We'll see you next time.
Did you learn anything new about me?
Yes.
Yeah?
I did.